vital medical facilities as regime's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip has now entered its 134th day. Yemen's military announces a missile strike on a British oil tanker in the Red Sea, reaffirming its commitment to targeting Israeli-linked vessels, signaling unwavering support for Gaza. And Iran unveils two domestically manufactured air defense systems, achieving another milestone in the country's relentless pursuit to fortify its defense capabilities. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News. Now, it's day 134 of relentless Israeli attacks on Palestinians in Gaza. The Palestinian Red Crescent says it's warned Israeli attacks on health facilities and staff in Gaza are posing a significant threat to the lives of those in need of medical care. The warning comes as Israeli forces have persisted on targeting Khan Yunis, a southern city of Gaza. Al-Amal Hospital is also under a complete siege with Israeli armored vehicles blocking its entrances. Regime forces have declared a curfew around the hospital and have terrorizing people taking shelter there to vacate the complex. Meanwhile, Al-Nasser Hospital, the largest medical facility in Khan Yunis, also remains under siege. Four patients died Friday due to lack of oxygen as shelling caused a power outage there. This is the 134th day since Israel launched its genocidal campaign on Gaza. Nearly 28,800 Palestinians have so far been killed and about 1.5 million displaced since then. Malnutrition is threatening the lives of tens of thousands of children in Gaza, and that according to the UN Agency for Children. UNICEF says the number will continue to rise if the situation does not change.
We have examined 2,000 children, and among the cases we checked was this child, who is 2 years and 7 months old. Before the war, before October 7, she weighed 11 kilograms. She is now 7 kilograms. So she is suffering from malnutrition. Her situation is difficult. She has complications. She suffers from dehydration, and she needs help. We have her the appropriate amount of nutrition supplements. We're trying our best to help her. We're referring her to a hospital where she can get treatment. That's all we could do so far.
Due to the conditions of the war in Gaza, the health and nutrition situation for children have changed. It has become an incomplete health system without vitamins, proteins, or fats in the healthy amounts. Children are relying on canned food, which contains preservatives. All this along with the fact that the water is polluted, the sand, the living conditions here that can spread diseases and germs. All this causes malnutrition among children in displacement camps in Rafah.
There are 325,000 children under the age of 5 who are at risk of acute malnutrition. UNICEF expects that in the coming days and weeks, there will be at least 10,000 children whose lives are essentially at risk if the situation does not change. This danger also comes as the health and drinking water systems face a complete collapse in the Gaza Strip, contributing to the spread of diseases. This creates a deadly cycle because we know that if children who are malnourished contract disease, their lives are more at risk.
Now joining us from the besieged Gaza Strip's city of Deir al-Balah is correspondent Moti Abu Musabe. Hello, Moti. Hope you're safe. What can you tell us with respect to the latest developments on the ground there?
Well, this genocidal war against Gaza enters its 134 consecutive days with more airstrikes, with more attacks and the bloodshed of the Palestinian civilians. In fact, it was a harsh night for the Palestinian civilians inside Gaza City as the Israeli airstrikes targeted several residential buildings, and those airstrikes actually were intensified in Sabra and the Sheikh Ridwan neighborhoods, claiming the lives of at least 10 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, in addition to dozens of the Palestinian children. It's worth mentioning that Azaytun neighborhood also was targeted by vehement Israeli artillery shelling, and even the eastern parts of the city were targeted as well by the Israeli artillery shelling, and the western parts of Gaza City and the northern parts of Gaza Strip were targeted heavily by place sporadic Israeli shelling and gunfire unleashed and fired by the Israeli military boats. And so Gaza City was living horrific conditions over the continuous and relentless Israeli airstrikes and incursions waged by the Israeli warplanes and the Israeli artillery and the Israeli military boats. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes also destroyed several residential houses, and even over the last moments, the Israeli warplanes renewed their attacks, targeting more residential buildings in the southern part of Deir el-Balah city. And the Nusrat refugee camp and the Al-Burij refugee camp actually were under heavy bombardments of the Israeli artillery that reached the eastern parts of those camps. So we are talking about continuous Israeli attacks reached all areas of Gaza Strip, and we are talking about catastrophic conditions that the Palestinian people are living, as they are still trapped between the continuous vehement Israeli airstrikes and attacks and the catastrophic humanitarian conditions due to the lack of the basic humanitarian needs. And when it comes to the Nasser Hospital, as you know, that the Israeli occupation forces are still attacking the Nasser Medical Complex and the Al-Amal Hospital, knowing that hundreds of the Palestinian evacuees, and in addition to the Palestinian paramedics and the Palestinian patients, are still stranded inside those hospitals. They are deprived of their basic humanitarian needs. In the same context, it's worth mentioning that Gaza's health ministry announced that a convoy of two trucks actually was obstructed by the Israeli occupation forces after the Israeli bulldozers dug two holes before those trucks and even behind them, preventing them to reach the Nasser gate, the Nasser hospital gate. This is the continuation of the Israeli systematic practices to deepen the suffering of the Palestinian people, and they are working by leaps and bounds to prevent any entry of the basic humanitarian and medical needs for the patients and the people stranded inside the hospitals. Let me say that Gaza's health ministry announced that 5 out of 6 Palestinian patients who were in critical conditions died after the Israeli occupation forces prevented the entry of the fuel needed to operate the generators, and even the severe shortage of the oxygen supplies. And apparently, as you can see behind me, that now we have more injuries resulted in from the latest attack on Deir el-Balah city. So this is happening right now here in Deir el-Balah city, in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. More casualties resulted in from the latest attack. Apparently, it is it's a fighter drone attack. As you know, that over the last couple of days, the Israeli occupation forces intensified the use of the Israeli fighter drones against the Palestinian civilians. Multiple groups of the Palestinian civilians were hit by the Israeli fighter drones, leaving dozens of the Palestinian martyrs and the Palestinian injuries. So this is the current situation here in the central area of Gaza Strip, in Deir el-Balah city particularly. And the people are bringing the casualties using the motorcycle and using the carts and using the civilian cars as the ambulances are striving to find the fuel needed to operate in order to bring the Palestinian casualties. So apparently we are in front of another massacre committed moments ago by the Israeli fighter drones in the southern part of Deir el-Balah city. So we are talking about continuous escalation, as the Israeli occupation forces still this moment maintain the intensity and the prevalence of the Israeli attacks covering all areas of Gaza Strip, in addition to the use of the starvation as a war weapon against the Palestinian people.
Now, okay, thank you, Moti. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon from Deir el-Balah. Moti Abu Musabe, correspondent, joining us. The International Court of Justice has warned that what is taking place in Gaza could lead to untold regional consequences. The ICJ says the developments will exponentially increase what is already a humanitarian nightmare. The UN court's calling for immediate and effective implementation of measures that it demanded back on the 26th of January. Back then, the ICJ called on Israel to prevent conducting any acts of genocide in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Hamas resistance movement has urged the court to directly order a stop to Israeli onslaught on Gaza. This comes after the Israeli Prime Minister vowed to go ahead with a planned ground assault on Rafah. This has drawn strong reactions from international organizations and world leaders, including Israel's closest allies. Palestinian resistance forces are continuing to push back against Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground continues. The military wing of Islamic Jihad resistance movement says it's launched rockets towards Ascalon and settlements surrounding Gaza. There's been no immediate report on damage or casualties. But earlier, Israeli media said an Israeli soldier was killed during latest ground battles against Palestinian resistance fighters in Gaza. Also, three others were seriously injured. Israeli media says a total of 233 soldiers have so far been killed since ground fighting began in Gaza in late October. The Palestinian resistance groups, though, say the actual number is much higher. They say Israel is hiding the real number of casualties as it already faces public anger over the handling of the Gaza war. Spokesperson for Yemen's armed forces has confirmed targeting yet another British oil tanker in the Red Sea. Yahya Sadi said that a number of rockets were fired on the vessel. He did not specify the scale of damage inflicted, but said target was appropriately hit. Sadi also reiterated Yemen's pledge to continue targeting Israeli-owned vessels or any other ships headed to Israeli ports in occupied Palestine. He said such attacks will continue as long as the Israeli regime continues its bloodshed of Palestinians. Yemeni forces have targeted dozens of such ships in response to Israel's campaign of genocide in Gaza. They've also been targeting British and American vessels, and that in response to aggression the U.S. and U.K. have recently launched against Yemen to protect Israeli interests in the region. Thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets of Sana'a and other cities, reaffirming their full support for the Palestinian people and the resistance front. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports out of Sana'a.
Yemenis from all walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their unwavering support for their Palestinian brothers and the resistance forces. People from as far away as Saudi Arabia's Najran province joined the gathering.
We, the tribes and nobles of Najran, came here in response to the call by Abdul Malik al-Houthi to support the people of Gaza. We declare from Sana'a that we are with Ansarullah in standing against the Zionists and the Americans who are committing genocide in Gaza. All Arabs and Muslims must stand by Gaza as it is a religious, national and humanitarian duty.
The position of the Yemeni people is consistent with its leadership. They are all in one accord with Palestine and with the axis of resistance. It is necessary to act with one's heart and soul. People have come out today to express their position and steadfastness until Palestine is liberated.
The protesters condemned the Israeli aggression against Rafah on the border of Egypt and urged their armed forces to intensify naval operations in response to the regime's war crimes in Rafah. They expressed willingness to join the Yemeni armed forces and fight against those who commit horrible crimes against innocent civilians in Gaza.
All Yemenis, young and old, men and women, learn to use all types of weapons, from pistols to automatic rifles, anti-aircraft guns and missiles. Everyone is preparing for the decisive battle with the Zionists. When we declare that we are ready, it is not to brag in the media, but rather we are truly prepared to confront America, Israel and those with them.
Earlier, the spokesman for the Yemeni army stated that the forces had successfully targeted a British ship in the Gulf of Aden using naval missiles. He also pledged to continue preventing Israeli-linked vessels from sailing through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait until the Israeli genocide stops.
People here believe that it is time for Muslims around the world to unite against the Israeli enemy and its backers. They call on the people across the Arab world to take to the streets and initiate concrete actions against the Israeli atrocities in Gaza. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Iran has unveiled two domestically manufactured air defense systems as part of a national drive to boost the country's defense. Ministry of Defense unveiled the Armon anti-ballistic missile system, as well as a low-altitude air defense system called Azarakhsh. Armand tactical missile interception system is capable of firing several missiles simultaneously within a range of 75 to 120 kilometers. Experts say range can be increased up to 150 kilometers. System is designed to operate at intermediate and high altitudes and is made up of a transporter, launcher, and radar. Other mobile missile launchers can be attached to the Armand system as well. Iran's unveiled and inducted to the armed forces several indigenously made defense systems, including missile and drones, in recent months. Iran's foreign minister says the Israeli genocide in Gaza will inevitably have adverse impacts on the security and stability of West Asia. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark during a phone call with a Saudi counterpart. He says such effects will occur if there is no immediate political solution. Amir Abdullahian reiterated that Tehran does not consider war as a solution. Iran's top diplomat also called for an emergency ministerial meeting of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation on Gaza. Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud welcomed the call. He also criticized the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's defiance of international calls for a ceasefire in Gaza. That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Human rights groups have warned that the Zionist regime's stated plan to forcibly transfer more than 1.4 million Palestinians in Rafah amounts to a continuing Nakba and a genocidal act. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Israel's stated plan to forcibly transfer more than 1.4 million Palestinians in Rafah amounts to a continuing Nakba and a genocidal act. Three human rights groups said recently, urging immediate international intervention. Rafah, located in southern Gaza along the border with Egypt, endured some of the deadliest hours of the Zionist regime's military offensive, now in its fifth month. In the early hours of Monday, February 12th, more than 28,000 Palestinians in Gaza have been martyred since October 7th, with thousands more missing under the rubble. An untold number of Palestinians have been martyred from hunger and disease in a secondary wave of mortality resulting from the Zionist regime's military offensive and siege. The vast majority of Gaza's population of 2.3 million people have been displaced, many of them repeatedly, and most are now sheltering in Rafah in inhumane conditions. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Zionist regime's prime minister, has repeatedly threatened to expand the military offensive in Rafah in recent days, raising international alarm over the unprecedented bloodshed and mass expulsion that would all but surely entail. At least 68 Palestinians, including 19 children and 13 women, were martyred during some 2 hours of bombing early on Monday, February 12th, according to Al-Haq, Al-Mizan, and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. The Palestinian Authority's official television station said that 74 people were martyred in Rafah strikes, and that is according to Reuters. The rights group added among those killed were numerous internally displaced persons who had sought shelter in Rafah, many of whom were killed while asleep in their makeshift tents, adding, many more bodies are still under the rubble. The Zionist regime's warplanes targeted at least 15 residential buildings, two mosques, agricultural lands, and areas close to the Egyptian-Palestinian border, according to rights groups. The rights group added, helicopters and gunboats were also involved in the attacks. 90 Palestinians, including 34 children, 18 women, and a journalist, were martyred in the Zionist regime's airstrikes on Rafah in the first 10 days of February. Sinai for Human Rights, an organization based in Egypt, said that on early Monday, February 12th, the Zionist regime bombed areas along the Gaza-Egypt border fence, which Cairo has reinforced due to fears of a mass expulsion of Palestinians from Gaza. The three Palestinian human rights groups said that the people amassed on Gaza's border with Egypt had fled to the area at the command of Israeli military on the instruction that Rafah was a designated safe zone. The groups added that the intensified targeting of Rafah comes as the Zionist regime's military continues to empty out Gaza City and forcibly displaces residents southward toward Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis, forcing Palestinians south to Rafah and then announcing the displacement of people in that area, whether internally into smaller pockets of Gaza into Egypt with no basic necessities for survival, is further evidence of the Zionist regime's genocidal intent. An unnamed senior Israeli regime military official told Axios that it had pounded Rafah early on Monday, February 12th, as a diversion while its forces freed two Israeli-Argentine men held in Gaza after being captured during the October 7th events. Of the more than 240 Israelis and foreign nationals who were captured on October 7th, around 130 remain in Gaza after around 100 were freed in a prisoner exchange during a week-long truce in late November. Recently, the Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of resistance movement Hamas, announced that two captives were killed and eight were seriously injured in the Zionist regime's strikes during the preceding days. The Zionist regime's military said 31 of the remaining captives in Gaza had been declared dead and their families notified. While international pressure for a ceasefire builds, Netanyahu has vowed to press on, telling an American television program that enough of the remaining captives in Gaza were alive to justify continuing the military operation. Last week, Netanyahu rejected a proposal for a prisoner exchange and an extended pause in fighting put forward by the resistance group Hamas. Reuters reported recently that senior officials from the United States, Egypt, the Zionist regime, and Qatar are due to resume negotiations in Cairo. Sources told Reuters that they are seeking a three-phase deal framework that will see the release of hostages and achieve an extended pause. Recently, U.S. President Joe Biden reiterated to Netanyahu over the phone that Washington opposes a military operation in Rafah in the absence of a real plan to protect civilians sheltering there. The airstrikes that killed dozens of civilians in Rafah came just hours after that phone call. Recently, Biden told reporters following talks with Jordan's King Abdullah that Washington was working to secure a deal that would hold hostilities for at least 6 weeks. Asked what kind of leverage the U.S. was applying on the Zionist regime, the U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said recently that diplomatic levers had been used and we have engaged with the Israelis on a multitude of levels. Miller added that those efforts had caused the Zionist regime to take steps at urging that have had real, tangible impact, but they have not been enough. He claimed, when the United States of America stands up and says something publicly, it matters.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. It's been more than 4 months since Israel started its onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Nearly 28,000 Palestinians have lost their lives and about 70,000 others have been injured. Most of the population in the besieged territory have been forced to move to the southern city of Rafah. Now Israel is preparing to invade Palestinians' last refuge in the south of the Gaza Strip. UN has warned of a bloodbath if Israel invades the city. Where else do Palestinians have to go? And will there ever be an end to the decades-long Western-backed occupation and genocide against the Palestinian people? We'll try to find out in tonight's Spotlight with our guests. Former UN weapons inspector in Iraq, Mr. Scott Ritter, who's joining us from Bethlehem, New York. And also joining us from Brussels, we have journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Ritter. After 133 days of Israeli terror, nearly 29,000 Palestinians have been killed. Most of them, of course, women and children in Gaza. The Israeli military has also raided the main hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The UN Rights Office says Israeli raids systematically target life-saving infrastructure, especially hospitals. Please share with us your perspective on this genocide that is unfolding in Gaza before our very eyes.
Well, first of all, we need to reflect on the fact that nobody's stepping up to stop this. Nobody. Not the United States, who should be, because we're the nation that has the ability to put the most pressure on Israel. Not Europe. not Asia, not Russia, not China, not Egypt, not Jordan, not Syria, not Saudi Arabia. Nobody is stepping up to stop this. And we just have to accept this reality, that whatever is happening right now is apparently not of sufficient horror, not a big enough tragedy to cause the moral compass of these nations to be altered. Which means that any talk today of a Palestinian state is empty talk, because you can't have a Palestinian state if you don't respect the Palestinian people. So we have to reflect on another reality, that at this point in time, the Israeli military has acknowledged that the goal and objective of the military defeat of Hamas has failed, that it's not going to happen. So this is a conflict that will continue, and the Palestinian people will continue, until which time either Israel is able to eventually wear down Hamas and defeat them, or the international community becomes so outraged by the depravity of the Israelis when it comes to the genocide, the war crimes they've committed, that there can be a push on the part of the international community to bring this war to an end. But right now, unfortunately, people with a heart are crying when they see the images of the babies, but no government has fundamentally changed its position. And so I think we're looking at continued violence for some point.
Hold that thought. I'm going to come back to you in a minute, Mr. Ritter. Elijah Magnier, Israel is bombing areas of Gaza that it has designated as safe, wiping out entire families. And now it's planning a ground offensive in Rafah, which is holding more than half of the population of Gaza. Officials in Cairo have already opposed calls to take in Palestinians in case they flee Rafah. The north of Gaza has been flattened. Another war crime is looming in the south. Where are Gazans supposed to go? EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell asks, are Gazans supposed to evacuate to the moon?
Well, Josep Borrell is right, because he was pointing out that the people in Gaza have no other place to go because there are no safe places in Gaza. Now, I don't think this is a bad idea for the Palestinians to remain in Rafah, because if they are forced to flee to Egypt, then this is another exodus, and this is exactly where Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, wants them to be, to make sure that he can exterminate all those who remain in Gaza and consider them all as potential targets. Now, at the moment, the Palestinian resistance is still fighting back in the north, is still firing missiles from the north, it is still fighting in Khan Yunis, and is preparing itself in Rafah. On the other hand, there are the axis of the resistance on the front with Lebanon, the Iraqis, and the Yemeni are also participating. And as far as we know, that the axis of the resistance is not going to allow Israel to defeat the Palestinians. So we understand that the potentiality of an escalation is on the table today, because Benjamin Netanyahu is determined to continue the war. He's not listening to anyone, because he wants to remain in power, and he is supported by the Israeli far-right ministers. So for that, the only hope of the Palestinians is to stand and fight. And I understand that there are many civilians who are paying the price, but they have been paying the price since 1930. And if we want to look at the current history from the beginning of this war in the 7th of October, Israel did everything to destroy everything possible in Gaza and to render the city impossible to live after the war. So basically, it's not going to change anything, and it would be much better for the Palestinians not to leave and for Egypt not to open the gate and play in Netanyahu's hands.
Right. Scott Ritter, is Israel using the excuse of eradicating Hamas, something that you also pointed out it has failed to achieve, to just to continue to kill Palestinians? The Israeli Prime Minister's insistence on continuing the onslaught and rejecting any ceasefires
basically shows his goal is genocide against Palestinians. In continuation to that, what you mentioned in your first answer, you said that no government is stepping up. Why is that?
Because the Palestinian cause hasn't generated, it doesn't resonate amongst anybody outside of Palestine. Let's be honest. Egypt has never articulated adequately for a Palestinian state. Egypt enjoys the status quo ante. They receive significant money from the United States that's linked to the money that we give to Israel. So they, you know, if you create a Palestinian state and it's premised on the notion of peaceful coexistence with Israel, if peace breaks out all over, there might be a recalibration of this aid to Egypt. Syria hasn't done a good job of standing up for a Palestinian state. Jordan hasn't. Jordan fears the Palestinians. The only ones who have done anything meaningful at this point in time is Hezbollah in Lebanon, but Hezbollah is a political party, not just a resistance movement, and they have a responsibility to Lebanon.
Let's not forget Yemen.
Well, Yemen is the sole exception right now, but the Yemeni response is limited. They have the ability to interdict shipping, and Israel's paying a very heavy economic price, and so is Europe, but it's not a game-changing price. What the Yemenis are doing is a harassment. It's an inconvenience, but it's not enough to drive Israel to its knees. Now, if Yemen were able to get some of Iran's hypersonic missiles and start attacking Israeli cities, maybe we'd have a different outcome, or maybe if Hezbollah unleashed some of its arsenal against Israeli cities, we'd have a different outcome. But right now, the heroism of the Yemenis isn't enough to change the outcome, and Hezbollah doesn't look like it's ready to step up and engage in full-scale war with Israel. And until that happens, Israel will operate with a free hand against the Palestinians in Gaza.
Elijah Magni, U.S. President Joe Biden recently said the Israelis have gone over the top regarding the assault on Gaza. One must ask, how far is too far in the support that Washington is giving the Israelis and the massacre that the Israeli regime is committing? The EU foreign policy chief once again said, if you're concerned with the civilian deaths to the U.S., then stop supplying them with arms.
Well, actually, the U.S. is concerned about the number of the civilians that is not arguing killing the civilians, but is saying over the top, because Israel was killing between 450 and 500 Palestinians every day, of which 70% are children and women. So what the Americans are saying is they don't want a permanent ceasefire, they don't want to stop this war, but they want Netanyahu to kill less civilians and less children and women, but to continue his war and to negotiate to free the prisoners and then to return to war and to fight against the Palestinian resistance until he defeats them, when his own generals are saying Hamas is an ideology, the Palestinian resistance cannot be defeated, and it can be weakened only. So there is a very clear indication from the United States and Europe that they don't want the end of the war. They're trying to bring humanitarian aid because that suits them for their own peace of mind, to say we're doing something for the civilians, but they're not managing, because less than 140 trucks are going in Gaza every day, some days 40, some days 50, and nothing is going to the north of Gaza of humanitarian aid for the last 14 to 16 days, which means that there are all the violations of international laws. The ICJ is starting on Monday, and Israel has not complied because it is unaccountable and because it is enjoying the full support of the United States at the United Nations in supplying weapons and covering all the Israeli crimes and sending them money. So this is why Israel are unleashed and they think they can do anything.
Scott Ritter, Iran's foreign minister, has said that Israel wants to drag the U.S. alongside itself into the quote-unquote West Asia quagmire. Do you believe the Israelis are seeking to expand their onslaught on Gaza into a wider regional conflict so they can get the U.S. directly involved? And if so, are these actions producing the results that the Israelis are seeking?
I think Benjamin Netanyahu has articulated in the past that he would like to see robust military action against Iran for the purpose of eliminating Iran's nuclear infrastructure. He recognizes that he could only do this if the United States went along. But that's a different problem that's being faced right now. I don't believe the Israelis want to expand this conflict because, for instance, if Hezbollah ever meaningfully engaged, meaning not the managed conflict, but a full-scale conflict, Israel would lose. Israel would lose Galilee. There's a chance Israel would lose the Golan Heights. And the Israeli generals know this. So they want to maintain pressure, the threat of a regional conflict, as a way of distracting American diplomatic efforts. But their focus is on resolving the crisis in Gaza. And as your other guest pointed out, look, they're in the business of killing Palestinians and nobody's stopping them. Nobody cares about the Palestinian people right now. The International Court of Justice's ruling is meaningless because nobody's stepping up. The only way the United States can disentangle itself is if the price paid for continuing to support Israel is greater than the price that they meaning that if the international community starts to hold the United States accountable, that maybe the United States will realize that supporting Israel is a losing proposition. But at this point in time, the United States isn't paying that price. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be the Palestinian people that continue to suffer.
Elijah Magnier, a few minutes earlier, we were talking about Yemen and the response that they've given to the genocide in Gaza, also the response they've given against American and British ships to the ongoing strikes on Yemen. Talk to us about the Yemeni response to the Gaza onslaught, how you view it, and also the defiant message that they have been sending to the U.S. and its allies so far.
The Yemeni have done an incredible work from the beginning of this war. They tried to bomb the Israelis in support of Gaza, but they were faced with the American and their allies' interception missiles on the way. So what they have done is they found out that it is better to block the Israeli shipments and prevent Israel from having it in the same way like nothing had happened during this war and suffer a little bit, even if Gaza is suffering even more, and always in the name of Gaza, because the Yemeni were very careful in not diverting the attention on the Palestinian cause. Now they step up even further when the Americans and the British started bombing Yemen, and the British and the Americans didn't learn that the Yemen for 7 years was under the bombardment and was never flexible. So what the Yemeni are doing is by targeting all the American, the British, and the Israeli ships, they are imposing a new rule of engagement on the Bab al-Mandeb, and they have promised to increase that. And I think the way they promise to increase is directly linked to the Israeli plans to go into Rafah and to force another exodus of the Palestinians either toward Egypt or toward the north of Gaza or along the sea as Netanyahu is thinking of doing. So this is why I said from the beginning, Gaza is not going to be left alone and the Palestinians are not going to be left to the mercy of Benjamin Netanyahu and the most immoral army in the world, that is the Israeli occupation forces, because Iraq and Yemen will increase the pace and Hezbollah is already starting to use a higher caliber. So I think Yemen can do a lot by showing the world that the simplest way to stop the interruption of the navigation of the Israeli shipments and the Americans and the British is to stop the war on Gaza. Unfortunately, there is not enough will of the international community to stop the war, and Netanyahu is not listening to anyone. and the Americans are not willing to commit a political suicide by stopping the support to Israel. Therefore, it is up to the axis of the resistance, mainly Yemen, because it proves very efficient, and because also the front of Lebanon is still within a controlled area and is not destined to expand, depending on what's happening on the ground in Gaza. Therefore, Yemen will find something new, and I'm sure something will come up in the next weeks, but we haven't seen yet Netanyahu implementing his plan to force an exodus, because he's still fighting in the north and he's still fighting in the south, and the war is not over in these areas, as he is lying to his people and saying, I'm going to move to another stage and go to Rafah because this is the last point.
Okay.
All the casualties that he's suffering are in the area that he claimed to occupy but not control.
Scott Ritter, there was a recent U.S. drone attack on the capital Baghdad, Iraqi capital Baghdad. Iraq, of course, condemned that, calling it a breach of their sovereignty. An Iraqi resistance movement following that drone attack called for submitting a request to the UN Security Council to demand the immediate withdrawal of foreign forces. The Iraqi prime minister also stated that Baghdad wants a quick withdrawal of the destabilizing U.S. forces from Iraq. What do you think are the motives behind the United States' recent attacks on resistance groups in Iraq?
Well, the motive is to make what the United States calls pro-Iranian proxies pay a price for the sin of launching a drone strike on Tower 22, killing three Americans, wounding several others. You know, the goal is to create a sense of deterrence, to imbue the pro-Iranian militias in Iraq with fear that the consequences they will pay for striking American targets will be greater than any benefit they gain from that. You know, let's just be clear. Taking a case to the Security Council is meaningless, given that the United States has a veto. So that's just a political gesture. And the prime minister can say all he wants about his desire to remove troops, but the United States has disregarded Iraqi political threats of this in the past. The only way the United States is going to withdraw is if the price they pay is intolerably high. And we'll find out how serious the Iraqi militias are. If they continue to do the pinprick attacks, then nothing will change. The only way this changes is with full-scale onslaughts that threaten American bases in Iraq with being overrun and massive casualties. At that point in time, the United States will make a determination that the price being paid to maintain a presence in Iraq is too great, and they'll withdraw. But that isn't going to happen until Iraq steps up to the plate and physically threatens the American troops present on their ground. And right now, I don't see the political will in Iraq to do that.
Mr. Magnier, in Brussels last month, the U.S., along with a dozen countries, of course, mostly Western states, suspended funds to UNRWA. That's the UN agency that supports Palestinian refugees. What was your initial reaction to hearing this decision? And also, what consequences will this move have for the population in need of assistance in Gaza right now?
It is very unfortunate because Israel has been aiming to defund UNRWA for a very long time. And what is most unfortunate is not the defunding. It is the narrative that the Israeli intelligence is offering to the world leaders and saying that there are 12 to 13 Palestinians who are part of Hamas and in UNRWA, and then condemn the millions of Palestinians who receive support from the United Nations refugee organization in Lebanon, in Jordan, in Syria, and in Palestine. So condemning all these people doesn't really come from a narrative from the Israelis or a lie, saying without offering any proof that to the confession of the American leaders and all the European leaders, even the United Nations, who fired or suspended the 12 employee or 13 without any proof. They admit that, and yet they are submitted to the Israeli will to suspend the funds on UNRWA and force the Palestinians to leave Gaza. In fact, the only objective of the Israeli government, led by the extremist Benjamin Netanyahu and all his gang, is to expel all the Palestinians, but not only in Gaza, but also in the West Bank, because the funding UNRWA in the West Bank is putting really all the Palestinians in trouble. And we're talking about 5 to 6 million Palestinians living in Palestine today that are living only on the support of the United Nations. And if you look at Gaza, it's made of dozens of refugee camps from Palestinians who came from all over Palestine during the 1948 exodus and later on. So this malicious step aims again to give another hit to the Palestinians, but it's a direct message from the Israelis that the Palestinians need to understand that the Israelis will never want to live with them. This is why the Palestinians can only stick to one thing, is the armed resistance to fight for their land, and I think this is what they are doing, and this is what the 7th of October offered for them as the only remaining choice.
Sure. One last question for Mr. Ritter. You mentioned earlier that governments aren't stepping up to the plate, but it's been the exact opposite with regards to the people, to the public, where just recently crowds in Jordan took to the streets of Amman in solidarity with Palestinians. They're protesting against the kingdom's continuation of exports of produce and vegetables and fruits to Israel. Similar demonstrations, of course, have been ongoing since the start of the Israeli onslaught in cities around the world. Do you think that this is the most isolated Israel has ever been because of this genocidal war?
I think in terms of global public opinion, yes. There's no doubt that the vast majority of the people around the world oppose what Israel is doing, and they oppose it vociferously. The problem is how to take this opposition and turn it into something that's politically meaningful. Because the political and economic elites that are making policy, that continue to advocate in support of Israel, aren't moving, they're not being moved off of their position. This public outrage hasn't found the leverage necessary to get political outcomes. And until it does, it's meaningless, because while it might be nice for a Palestinian in Gaza, if they can access a television, to see a demonstration somewhere in Europe, in the United States, the reality is within 5 minutes an Israeli bomb is going to land near them, Israeli tanks are going to slaughter people, Israeli soldiers are going to shoot innocent victims, and nothing is going to change.
Right.
And that's just the reality.
All right. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Former UN weapons inspector in Iraq, Mr. Scott Ritter, joining us from Bethlehem, New York. And thanks to journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier, joining us from Brussels. And, of course, a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Bismillahir Rahmanir
Rahim. Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions. And questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, brothers and sisters of Islam all across the world. Welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani, an Islamic scholar and researcher of the Islamic House of Qom, is present in today's program to answer questions regarding Islamic beliefs. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, for today's discussion, we want to talk about an important topic. Sometimes we find in the public culture of the Muslims all around the world who they read out some religious formula or invocations in order to start an action. For example, before eating, they recite Bismillah. Or when they want to drink water, they recite a special dua or supplication. When they want to visit a religious place and to seek help from the religious person who is buried over there, they go there and tie a knot, for example, or a thread or something, or a lock on the place. They visit, they touch it, they kiss the holy chamber around the tomb of some people. These are the actions that some people and some Muslims do all around the world. Are such actions authentic according to Islamic beliefs or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, we should differentiate between tabarruk and dakhil.
Uh-huh.
What we have in Islamic terminology, we have tabarruk or mutabarrik, for example,
yes,
which is different.
Yes.
But when it comes to dakhil in a way you explained, you know, that sometimes, for example, people for curing their sickness,
uh-huh,
for answering their haja, you know, their requests from Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for example, they go to some, let's say, trees, I don't know, some stones, some, let's say, pieces of things,
yes,
and they believe that it is holy, and they ask something from that sort of things, or do the khil on that the way,
yes,
that you explained,
yes,
seeking refuge, seeking help, and that, for example, kind of things. That is absolutely false. That is,
yes,
absolutely wrong.
You mean these are not holy tombs of imams,
yeah,
or something? Like a tree, like a wall,
tree, with people, yeah,
like
as
a
you
piece
said,
of
like
stone.
They put some, for example, clock on, I don't know, some doors of something,
yes,
you know? They,
yes,
believe that in the holiness of those sort of,
yes,
things, asking. I think
the tie a knight, for example, on the branches,
yeah, yeah,
of a tree,
yeah,
or a flower,
yeah,
or something. That's
if
right,
by
okay,
dakhil,
yes,
you mean these kind of,
yes,
actions, that is absolutely superstitious.
Superstitious, okay.
And it is not allowed in Islam. We do not have any kind of, let's say, Islamic
recommendation
for that.
That's right.
Yeah, or
okay,
justification. No, from jurisprudential perspective, we are not allowed to do such,
mm-hmm,
things. And also it is said that once the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in the Battle of Hunain,
yes,
he explicitly mentioned that this sort of thing should not be performed.
Sorry, very much recalls me about the idol worshipping at the early Islam. Because you see that there were so many idols made out of the stone and wood,
mm-hmm,
in the Holy Kaaba.
Mm-hmm.
And the people used to go to these,
yeah,
stones and do,
yeah,
such dakhil, I mean, to seek help,
yeah,
or to request, we,
yeah,
can,
yeah,
say, help and contribution from those idols.
Yeah, it was completely prohibited,
yes,
and forbidden,
yes,
by the Holy Prophet. It said that in the Battle of Hunain, there was a tree.
Uh-huh.
Then the mushrikin believed in the holiness of that tree.
Yes.
And then they did something like tabarruk with that, for example, tree. And then they asked the Prophet Muslims asked,
yes,
the Prophet to allow them, to permit them to, for example, do the same thing, to believe in the holiness of that tree, to seek sometimes help from that,
yes,
let's say, tree. Then the Prophet sweared by Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, says that it is absolutely wrong, it is absolutely false. You are like the people of Bani Israel, and you must be aware that it is a kind of idolatry, or let's say idol worshiping.
Yes.
And that's why you became mushrik.
Mm-hmm.
Based on this authentic hadith of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, many of the maraji, if I can mention their names, for example, Ayatollah Wahid Khurasani, Makarim,
yes,
Shirazi, Nuri Hamadani, these maraji were explicitly mentioned in their books,
yes,
and their risala, that it is a superstitious action,
yes,
that never should be performed.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at IRIB.ie.